The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Approval of the economy is three times higher under Trump than it is under Biden. Or sometimes we call him O'Biden, because I think maybe Obama is calling the shots. For 7 years, you and I have been fighting side by side to rescue our nation from the sinister forces who truly hate it and want to destroy it. And some of those are from within. We do know that. We do know that.
We certainly know that, said Trump on Saturday. I think that's in Erie, Pennsylvania, his rally speech. John Fetterman even admitting he's going to be tough to beat in Pennsylvania. Fetterman, he said that this past weekend as well. But there is Donald Trump referring to the dear leader, inadvertently saying, Biden, I mean. But actually, you can call him O'Biden, because he's the one that's leading the attack from within. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us here at the top of the work week. Another Monday broadcast as we kick things off for the next 5 days. Tomorrow, of course, we'll be joining live from America, the Rumble channel that is now broadcasting some of Donald Trump's rallies live and gaining in popularity. So we're happy to take that final slot of the day. I think it's 9 p.m. Eastern. That would be 8 p.m. Central. So if you'd like to watch our program over at LFA, you can find that on Rumble and do so. Of course, we'd love for you to watch it right here on our very own Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble and search for The Trumpet Daily, and you can watch the live stream. You can actually see it at 11 a.m. in the Central Time Zone of the United States. The playing of it on LFA will be the show from that day, so it'll appear about 8 hours or so after we finish the live broadcast here. You can also get to the live broadcast at our own website, trumpetdaily.com. You can email the show, too, with some feedback, if you like, on any of these developments or any news items that you think we would benefit from seeing. We're getting more and more sending us emails just with clip ideas, things that they see on social media and such. So you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. So Barack Hussein Obama, you know, it's great that all of this corruption in the Biden crime family is being exposed, but in many ways, it really does. In addition to the attacks on Donald Trump, all of that just overshadows what the dear leader, Barack Obama, has gotten away with. I mean, think about the lawlessness that man has gotten away with. And they're not even cure, even the death of his chef last week and all of the weird pictures that have come out since and the things on the call record for the 911 or the things that aren't there. And nobody in the regime media is even curious. I'll get to a PJ Media article here in just a second. But just stepping back and looking at the bigger picture, it's Barack Hussein Obama. I think it was October 18th, 2016. He said no serious person could ever say that our elections could be rigged. And there's too much decentralization. And he went on and on. He waxed eloquent. Hillary, it was in the bag. Sure, for sure she was going to win. And then the election happens. When was it? November 8th? I get him confused. It's obviously a Tuesday in early November. Donald Trump shocks the world, right? And then Barack Obama, he talks about how, well, it's going to be a peaceful transition. Just a month after, and during that time, by the way, as I covered with you last week, there were all these Democrat operatives that were almost threatening the electors, saying, don't you dare vote for Donald Trump. You have the power to switch your vote. You do that these days. If you do anything like that, when a Democrat wins, they're going to throw you in jail. They're going to send you to prison. That's what they're trying to do that in Michigan. Anyway, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, But it was Barack Obama who had that secret CIA assessment. He strategized and planned with Brennan, with Comey, Clapper, all those guys. They knew the Steele dossier was bogus. They knew it was a lie. And you could say, well, those lies came from the Hillary camp. But it's Barack Obama who took those lies. He was the president at that time. They come out with the secret CIA assessment that Russia not only meddled, Russia helped Donald Trump win. So they said that the election was rigged in 2016. Hillary to this day still hasn't accepted the result. She's an election denier. So it was Obama together with Brennan, and of course all of this was used as justification for spying, illegally spying on the candidate Trump and then spying on President Trump. And it was Obama's people waltzing into those FISA courts. Yeah, getting the warrant so that they can continue to spy on a president-elect and then a sitting president. It's Obama's people behind the coup. Multiple coups. It's Obama's. Obama's the one that handpicked Joe Biden. And here you have Donald Trump acknowledging the obvious. It's Obama who's behind the puppet. Yes, there's plenty of crimes in the Biden crime family. And they ought to be exposed. But don't lose sight of what's covered in this book. It's the Antiochus type that is attacking this country from within. The fundamental transformation, it's being led by Barack Hussein Obama. Obama's the one who got on the phone in early 2020 and told those Democrat candidates, listen, you know, it's time for you to step aside. We've decided on Joe Biden. He's going to campaign from the basement. We're going to use COVID as a pretext to just have mail-in ballots right across the nation. We've got all the Democrat machines set up in Phoenix and in Atlanta and Philadelphia and Detroit. All of them, they're all set up for the steal. We've got to get those swing states. And everything's in place. Shut down the election. You've heard the people. They've been out there saying, look, it's not going to be election day. It's going to be election week or maybe even a month. Who knows? So Obama orchestrated the steal of the 2020 election. He's guilty of all these treasonous crimes. And yet he hardly gets a mention. Even when his chef mysteriously dies, and you get all these conflicting reports. They weren't even at Martha's Vineyard. Well, I guess they were there, but they weren't at the house that night. They were somewhere else. And then the 911 call. It comes in from this mysterious, unidentified person. We can't really make that known. How many people are in on these kinds of crimes? Again, maybe he did drown. He didn't have a life jacket on. But why isn't there more transparency when it comes to Barack Hussein Obama? Meanwhile, you get the talking heads. They're almost hyperventilating talking about what Trump might have done or what Trump wanted to do, but he didn't. Yeah, you heard it at the top of the news on our station. They're as left-wing as all the others. The guy's going to testify today who heard it from someone else at Mar-a-Lago saying that Trump wanted to delete security cam footage. But they didn't mention Trump by name. They just said, you know, the boss wants to see the footage deleted. It never was deleted. They handed it all over to the feds. But they're going, this is the top story at Feature Story News. A witness that's saying that Trump wanted to delete footage but didn't. As I told you last week, here Hillary Clinton, she goes out and actually deletes it all. She destroys it all. She destroys the devices. She tells the FBI, I'm not going to give you it. I'm just going to destroy it. And then Jim Comey comes out and says, no serious prosecutor would go after Hillary for, it was just a little careless on her part. You know, she was careless in destroying all that evidence that had been subpoenaed. This is from PJ Media. It says, last week, Barack Obama's private chef, Tafari Campbell, fell off his paddle board and sank below the surface of the Edgartown Great Pond. His drowned body was recovered Monday morning. They didn't even get the body until the next day, in the water of the former president's Martha's Vineyard estate. says, currently there is no foul play expected, and it's worth noting that Campbell was not wearing a life jacket. So these are the known facts, says PJ Media. However, certain peculiarities have presented themselves, causing some people to raise questions. For example, the reason for the 911 call that prompted the search was left blank in official logs. You've probably seen pictures of the logs online where there's the reason for every other call that night. Oh, yeah, it's spelled out in detail. But the one regarding Barack Hussein Obama's chef, the reason for that call is left blank. The authorities, I guess, there at Martha's Vineyard decided, you know what, let's just leave that information off of the call logs. Forget about that. Says here, the person Campbell was with at the time of the accident remains unidentified, and the police have refused to disclose the person's name. Got to keep that secret. Even the police there at Martha's Vineyard. After all, he's the dear leader. We can't make him look bad. We can't make this look a little fishy. It says here, and by, of course, deleting these things or not identifying these things, it only adds to or fuels the speculation that something is not quite above board here. It says, adding to the intrigue is that Barack Obama appeared with what looks like a black eye and a bandaged hand playing golf at the exclusive Vineyards Club on Friday, while Michelle Obama played tennis elsewhere on the grounds. I don't think Feature Story News is going to be too interested in these little details here. You're not going to hear this at the top of the hour. Not on the mainstream media or from the mainstream media. Certainly not the regime media here in the United States. It says here, photos of Obama reveal a bruise or black eye beneath his left eye, along with bandages wrapping fingers on his left hand. It says here, some dispute the significance of the bandages, insisting that they are sports bandages meant to prevent blisters from playing golf. Perhaps that explains it, but other details are being noticed as well. For example, some have called out the media for reporting that Campbell could not swim as an explanation for the drowning, when his own social media posts prove he most certainly could. Why are people almost obsessed with rushing to the defense of the dear leader, even if it means promoting false information or misinformation? Listen, he didn't know how to swim. He fell off the paddleboard and he drowned. Simple as that. And yet you go look at his own social media posts. The guy looks like an avid swimmer. He's certainly into water sports. He's out on the paddleboard. Says here, initial reports claim that the Obamas were not at their estate at the time of the incident, though later reports indicated that Barack and Michelle Obama were out of the house. Oh, okay. But on Martha's Vineyard, when it happened, it's unclear if their daughters, Sasha or Malia, were at the home at the time, though they were seen leaving Martha's Vineyard the following day. So they were all there, the whole family, the chef, everybody. And yet all of this murkiness when it comes to the details. Why? I don't know what happened. But why? Where's the regime media? Are they interested? Are they curious at all? It says here, the individual who was with Campbell at the time of the accident and the woman who reportedly called 911 both remain unidentified. We don't know who he was with on the paddleboard, and we don't know who gave the call, and we don't know what prompted the call, because that was left blank on the call logs. That's a former president of the United States of America. People, I mean, given what happened with the Kennedys many, many years ago, late 60s, early 70s, I forget the exact year, but they're going to start steering clear of places like Martha's Vineyard. These kinds of mysterious events keep happening, and then they're covered up. Why not be more forthright? Yeah, he was with this person. This is what happened. This is the lady that called. This is why she called. We found the body the next day. Very strange. Very strange indeed. Step back for a moment. Leave aside that incident, whatever happened there. And just look at what this man, Barack Obama, has gotten away with. Didn't even want to leave D.C. after he left office, because he kept running the shadow government that was attacking Donald Trump and has been relentlessly for 7-8 years, as Trump acknowledged in Erie, Pennsylvania over the weekend. This has been going on for years and years and years. And you have to wonder if Obama really wanted Biden in there, not because he was just an easy man to control, but because he knew how much baggage he was carrying. He knew how many crimes that family had gotten away with right out in the open. And he knew if that was ever exposed, well, it's just another nice cover for the crimes that the dear leader has gotten away with. Speaking of the dear leader and his Department of Injustice, you might have seen over the weekend where they're now suddenly very interested in Devin Archer being put in prison. You talk about intimidation tactics. Here's this guy. I think he was convicted last February, a year and a half ago, February, and it was on some kind of fraud charge. So he's supposed to go off to prison for a year. And 6 months later, I guess to June or July of last year, his appeal failed. So since that time, almost for a year, he hasn't even gone off to prison, which is mind-boggling to me. I mean, if he's convicted and he loses on appeal, you would think the next day they'd send him off to prison. He hasn't gone off to prison for a year. Now he's about to testify, a closed-door hearing today in the House, at the House Committee, the Oversight Committee. And now the DOJ is suddenly very interested in getting him in prison as fast as possible. This is from Sundance. It says, on the eve of a very high-profile House Committee testimony by Hunter Biden's business associate, Devin Archer, mysteriously, the DOJ from the Southern District of New York asked Judge Ronnie Abrams to schedule a date for Archer to report to prison in an unrelated case. It says, if the SDNY was attempting to threaten or intimidate Archer in advance of his testimony, this is the path they would take. This is what they do. Sent out a letter on Saturday. Yeah, the DOJ was really busy on Saturday. Usually there's nothing much coming out of the DOJ, but not this past weekend, because they know Archer's about to testify. So here come the intimidation tactics, and you see reports online of Archer basically being in hiding. It says here, as noted by Politico, quote, the court isn't expected to make a decision before Archer will meet behind closed doors with the House Oversight Committee, meaning that even if the court ultimately sides with the request, Archer wouldn't have to report to prison before the meeting. And his attorney said in a statement that he will move forward with his planned appearance on Monday. Sundance then adds, however, the timing of the letter on the weekend before the testimony looks transparently motivated. It certainly does. Like so many other acts, I mean, they're not even trying to hide their bias or the fact that they're thoroughly and completely weaponized and have been since the days of the dear leader. This is Jim Comer on Maria Bartiromo's show on Sunday, clip one.
The government is apprising the court of the status of Devin Archer's appeal of his judgment of conviction, and they request that the court set a surrender date for the defendant to report to a facility. Please walk us through what this letter says.
Yeah, the letter from the Department of Justice is trying to nudge the judge to go ahead and sentence Devin Archer for something unrelated to what we're going to be talking to him about tomorrow. It's odd that it was issued on a Saturday, and it's odd that it's right before he's scheduled to come in to have an opportunity to speak in front of the House Oversight Committee and tell the American people the truth about what really went on with Burisma. So, you know, I don't know if this is a coincidence, Maria, or if this is another example of the weaponization of the Department of Justice, but I can tell you this. The lengths to which the Biden legal team has gone to try to intimidate our witnesses, to coordinate with the Department of Justice, and to certainly coordinate with the Democrats on the House Oversight Committee to encourage people not to cooperate with our investigation, to encourage banks not to turn over bank records, to encourage Treasury not to let us have access to those suspicious activity reports. It's very troubling.
It is very troubling, but this is what they get away with. Hillary was able to destroy all the evidence. She didn't just think about it or talk about it. She did it. And Obama's FBI just gives her a slap on the wrist. Obama's DOJ just gives her a slap on the wrist. And then decides, as soon as Trump wins, decides that, well, Putin stole it. Yeah, I know they went through 4 weeks. You talk about rushing through a secret intelligence assessment. I mean, when these people want to go after their enemies, they can pull together an indictment or put together a secret intelligence assessment just like that. And meanwhile, when they're supposedly investigating the Bidens, I mean, it just goes on for years and years and years. The investigations in those cases are meant to cover up crimes, not reveal them, not to go after criminals, but to cover it up. And then they, now it's so brazen, they just laugh about it. Where's the Biden clip where he's basically joking about impeachment? Play that one if you can find it. Got it? Don't have it? I think it might be. I'll get to it later. I get ahead of myself. I throw the guys for a loop in the control room. You got it. Play it.
But guess what? In 2 years, I've cut the national debt by $1.7 trillion while doing all of this. $1.7 trillion. Republicans may have to find something else to criticize me for. Now that inflation is coming down, maybe they'll decide to impeach me because it's coming down. I don't know. I love that one.
Very funny. Ha ha. First he lies. He's reduced the debt, U.S. debt, by $1.7 trillion. He can't be serious. He's lying. He's lying about that. And then he jokes that maybe the Republicans will come after me and impeach me because I'm lowering inflation so much. I'm doing so much to help the economy. This is from Fox News. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer said he believes the Democrat, or it should be the Democrat Department of Justice, the DOJ is trying to obstruct the GOP's investigation into Hunter Biden's foreign business dealings and President Biden's alleged involvement. They are trying to obstruct. Comer knows it. Everybody knows it. Donald Trump knows it. The DOJ knows it. Just obstruct, impede, stall, delay, let the statute of limitations run out. They're quite good at these tactics. But then, as I say, when they're going after their opponent, I mean, they spring to action quickly to come up with to create some kind of crime out of thin air. This is where Trump made his mistake in just handing over all of that security footage from his own house. He should have fought against it. He even said as much on Saturday. You hand over all the footage, and then they get busy. I mean, they've got 60 days of footage. They're examining the timeline. They're looking at who's walking here or there. They get one guy in an interview later to say this is what happened. It doesn't fit right with the timeline. I got him. We got him on a process crime. He lied. They catch little lies like that, quote-unquote lies like that. Says here, this is Andy McCarthy, if the business was legitimate, talking about the Biden crimes, if the business was legitimate, why does it appear that these foreign regimes, so anxious to pay the Bidens, do not appear to have gotten comparable value in exchange? In other words, they get $5 million here and there. What did they get in return other than influence from the big guy? That's McCarthy's point. It says, if the business was legitimate, why not have straight payments, money directly exchanged for goods and services? Yeah, why do you have to hide it? Hunter should just say, we gave them this service, or we provided them with this, whatever we're selling, and they put the money directly into our account or to our legitimate business that we set up. Why instead did the Biden business structure payments in the manner of money launderers, parsing multi-million dollar foreign transfers into smaller slices, the better to draw less attention, which were routed through a labyrinth of transfer channels, bank accounts, and business entities that appear to have existed almost exclusively to collect money rather than produce value? What was the crime family selling? If not Biden's influence, what product were they selling? Good question. It says, why set up 20 limited liability companies? Why payments to no fewer than 9 Biden family members including grandchildren and others who can have had nothing to do with the relevant business transactions. It says this is all straightforward enough, or at least it would be if this were a normal, corrupt investigation, but there's nothing normal about it. That's because, as we saw in connection with Hunter Biden's Delaware debacle last week, the collapse of his sweetheart plea deal, the Biden Justice Department is not really investigating the Bidens. It is protecting the Bidens, particularly the president. This is their goal. This is their objective. And, of course, they can get away with it because the regime media has the same objective. Do everything possible to just protect the big guy, to protect the Bidens. They're not even going to go anywhere near Obama, as I said at the top. But now, I mean, Comer's getting really close to all the evidence of wrongdoing. Well, they've got mountains of it. Putting it together with Hunter's laptop and Bob Alinsky's testimony, the IRS whistleblowers, the FBI whistleblower, and now today, Devin Archer. And yet listen to what the regime media will say. Clip 11.
So far, they have been not able to prove any evidence here of wrongdoing.
House GOP members continue to try and link Hunter's business dealings to the president, though they have yet to produce any concrete evidence.
Now, it is important to keep in mind, while Republicans believe that there is a tie between Hunter Biden's business dealings and the president himself, they have yet to provide any hard evidence that the president himself has done anything wrong.
House Republicans are going to accuse him. They're going to make the accusation.
They're going to accuse him of all sorts of stuff.
Whether they have the evidence or not.
Correct.
And Republicans have not tied the president, Joe Biden, to profiteering from them.
You know, they didn't have the evidence yet.
Where's the evidence? There is no evidence of any wrongdoing by the president.
There is today zero evidence that Joe Biden, the president of the United States, knew about what his son was doing. And if the president of the United States committed the kind of offenses that in the Republican fever dreams they're saying he committed without any evidence, there is at this point zero evidence that Joe Biden is guilty of anything. What the Republicans are doing, of course, is they're just very, very angry that their guy got impeached twice. And so they're just casting about for a way of revisiting retribution on the Democrats. And this is their latest fever dream.
When they say zero evidence, that means there's mountains of it. Mountains that are spilling over the edges. When they say there's all kinds of evidence, take Adam Schiff. When there's evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, I've seen it, said Schiff, then you know there's no evidence. Listen, as I said, Feature Story News, the top story that they had at the top of the hour was on this guy who's in Mar-a-Lago who heard from another guy that the boss said he wanted to delete footage. And even in Feature Story News' report, it says for trying to delete footage. Not that he did it. He didn't. Nothing's been deleted. But trying to delete footage, you see, that reveals intent. And I mean, these people can divine motives. They know what's going on right in our heads. And they go after you for thought crimes. If you think, if you even dare want to delete footage, you're going to jail. Now, Hillary can actually delete it, no problem. She can delete mountains of it, no problem. Listen to this from CNN. See, just be alert for the language. See how that they treat this subject. It's very serious. Very, very, very serious. And yet, as you listen to their reporting, these are the same people that say there's zero evidence that the Bidens did anything wrong. And yet, listen to the way that they report all things Trump. Clip two.
CNN is learning that Yusil Tavares is the name of the IT worker at Mar-a-Lago who oversaw the surveillance footage on the property. Special counsel says he was asked by another Trump employee to erase footage from a server. He has this language that the boss wants it to happen. Does an attempt or discussion of destroying evidence, is that evidence enough of a crime, or do you actually have to manage to do it?
Yeah, so certainly this looks like it's part of a conspiracy. If you look at the time frames that are shown there, it shows that on June 2nd, attorney number one was going to review the boxes of documents. And we have evidence now that the tape shows that 64 boxes were actually moved prior to then. Only 30 boxes were returned on June 2nd for that attorney to review.
So he says that with respect to attempting, which he didn't do, And even Sciutto rightfully points that out. Is it a crime to want to do it, or does he actually have to do it? And what does the guy say? Certainly this looks like part of a conspiracy. And then he goes on a little bit later in the same exchange and talks about the time codes and the moving of the box. You see, you turn over the things to them. You give them 60 days of security cam footage from your own house. And you see how they go through it frame by frame. Listen to this MSNBC guy saying that Trump, the indictment's been expanded, as we covered last week. Now Trump has a lot to worry about because of what he was thinking. This is clip 3.
But it shows consciousness of guilt for the other crimes, the violations of the Espionage Act. I mean, why would you want to destroy the video? Because you knew what you were doing was wrong. So this helps juries believe that the defendant is guilty. Obstruction is a double whammy. It's its own crime and will help convict the former president and perhaps Nada and De Oliveira of other crimes. So he's got a lot to be worried about right now.
Mm-hmm, a lot, because it shows consciousness of guilt, you see. It shows, and now this means he's guilty for all these other bogus indictments as well. That he would even want to destroy the footage shows he's guilty, for sure. Listen to this MSNBC lady giving her expert analysis on Donald Trump's state of mind, clip 4.
And I think the thing that is so damning about this, what is suggested in the indictment, is the length to which Donald Trump went. If they can prove, and it looks like they have the evidence from this indictment, that he had the state of mind, that he was sending directions and directly involved and engaged in conversations, including getting rid of the potential evidence.
Potential evidence. The fact that he had a state of mind to want to delete this potential evidence, and nothing was deleted. None of them are saying Sciutto, I guess, came closest, that he didn't do it. He didn't commit the crime. And yet, they're convinced. This is now very, very serious. Listen to Trump from over the weekend about these security tapes, clip 5.
They went after 2 fine employees yesterday, fine people. And I don't think they think that the tapes were even changed. These were my tapes that we gave to them. And they basically then say, that's not enough. I don't think we would have had to give it. I'm not sure that we would have even had to give it. These were security tapes. We handed them over to them. I doubt we would have, if we wanted to fight that, I doubt we would have had to give it. But regardless, we gave it.
You see, the big mistake was that he and his team, his lawyers, didn't fight it to begin with. You don't need our security cam footage. Look, we're haggling over documents, as every ex-president does. But he was so cooperative, FBI coming in and out of Mar-a-Lago, handing over the security footage. I mean, if anything, it shows how compliant he was and how he had nothing to hide. 60 days of security footage? And they get to, and then they come in during the raid and they go through Melania's closet? What activity here is evil in its intent? What the DOJ was doing and has done and continues to do, or what the Trump team did, you decide. Listen, going back again to his rally over the weekend, he's talking here about the Biden crime family and just all of the corruption that's going on and how they're not held to account, largely because Republicans don't have the courage to fight. They're exposing a lot of it, but they lack the courage to actually fight against it or to prosecute it or to put these criminals in jail where they belong. Clip 9.
Joe Biden is the most corrupt president in American history. The Biden's colossal scams, money laundering, and criminality make Hillary Clinton look like a very beautiful angel. Just think of what he's been revealed to have done in just the last few weeks alone. A really great guy, Chairman James Comer, and Senator Chuck Grassley, and working with I'll tell you, working with some of the finest people, they really are, Jim Jordan, so many fine people, released a bombshell FBI document laying out a massive bribery scheme in which Hunter and Joe Biden shook down a Ukrainian energy boss, shook him down, a energy boss, a big one, for $10 million so that, as the executive said, Hunter could protect us through his dad from all kinds of problems. Well, can you imagine if I did that one? That wouldn't work out too well. It was also revealed this week that Hunter's business partner witnessed Hunter put foreign business associates on the phone with Crooked Joe at least 24 times. Let's see what happens with that. The Republicans have to do something about this. But the biggest complaint that I get is that the Republicans find out this information and then they do nothing about it. They don't do anything about it.
That's the biggest complaint he gets from ordinary Americans at his rallies, the interactions that he's having. The biggest complaint he gets is that Republicans, they're now finding out what went down, but they won't do anything about it. They go on vacation. Or they talk about how that, well, we're not going to stoop to the level that the Democrats did with two impeachments. We can't just impeach every president. It's not about the truth or upholding the Constitution or providing oversight or reining in this rogue presidency, this fake presidency. It's not about that. If you're Rand Paul, you just got to talk about how much better we are than Democrats because we don't resort to those kinds of tactics. We're certainly not going to impeach. But when it comes to Trump, I mean, he just exposed or explained even some of the most recent revelations regarding this crime family, and yet nothing is done. Contrast it with the way they go after Trump. This is clip 10.
The radical lunatic Democrats, they impeach me, they indict me, they rig our elections, and the Republicans just don't fight the way they're good people, but they don't fight the way they're supposed to fight. The others are dirty, sick players, and the Republicans are very high class. They've got to be a little bit lower class, I suspect. They sit back and they say, they have other priorities. We have to look at other things. Any Republican that doesn't act on Democrat fraud should be immediately primaried and get out. Out.
You've got to act, as he says there, act on this fraud. They indict him. They impeach him. They spy on him. All orchestrated by the dear leader. They steal elections. They're guilty of treason, leading a coup, faking insurrections, fake news, covering up laptops, saying it's Russian disinformation, saying Putin won the election for Trump in 2016. And yet, all this persecution, the headline in the New York Times today, Trump crushing DeSantis and GOP rivals, according to the latest New York Times Siena poll, crushing his rivals. The twice, notice the subhead, this is from the New York Times, the paper of record, the twice indicted former president leads across nearly every category and region as primary voters wave off concerns about his escalating legal jeopardy. Two references to the legal struggles in one sentence. And his popularity rises. This is from the New York Times. Why Trump is so hard to beat. In the half century of modern presidential primaries, no candidate who led his or her nearest rival by at least 20 points at this stage has ever lost a party nomination. So they're trying to interfere with the next election through these indictments. But at least with respect to the primaries, it's just not working. There's many that are still saying that, well, once he gets off into the general against Joe Biden will run away with it. He ran away with it last time because of all the fake ballots. It'll be interesting to see how next year plays out as Trump is at the front and they continue to attack the radical left, and most Republicans just kind of step aside and say, well, look, we're not going to attack like they do. We've got to move on to other issues like the economy, maybe the border crisis, something other than Trump. And yet what are voters saying? He's definitely hard to beat, the New York Times acknowledges. When we come back, we'll conclude with one more short story of interest and then a short Bible study for today as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Sam noticed an interesting story over the weekend. This is, I think it was linked to at Drudge. But it says, as Donald Trump faces mounting, it's from the Daily Beast, as he faces mounting legal problems, the former president has consistently turned to one of his favorite YouTube channels, the fiercely pro-MAGA Right Side Broadcasting Network. It says, and yet RSBN is facing criticism for not being Trumpy enough from an unlikely source, current and former staffers. So RSBN, they've got current and former staffers that are unhappy, maybe with the channel's drift more in the direction of Rhino Republicans. But then later on in the article, it says, live from America TV, LFA, that's the channel that we're joining tomorrow. Live from America TV, which goes by the acronym LFA TV, wants to become what RSBN is for YouTube, but on Rumble. So it's available at Rumble. It says, so far, LFA TV has enlisted former RSBN talent, including, well, it lists some of the pundits. It says, in a phone interview with the Daily Beast, the founder of LFA TV, Jeremy Harrell, said he heard through the grapevine about RSBN's troubles, and he was looking to capitalize on it. So a little bit of inside baseball here with respect to the media. And some how competitive that that particular field is. In any event, you can see just by looking at LFA's numbers on Rumble that their popularity is on the up and up. It is increasing. So I'm not sure how long we'll remain on the channel, but hopefully we can have a nice run and draw some attention to the Trumpet Daily on another platform, and we'll see our own numbers continue to increase as well. Last week, we went through a study of Psalm 78, or we got partway through it anyway. You can go back and look at some of those shows from the middle part of the week to catch up if you like. But we'll go ahead and pick it up where we left off, I believe last Wednesday, maybe it was Thursday. But it's from Psalm 78 and verse 32. It says, for all this, speaking, this psalm goes through, it's a psalm of remembrance. It's a psalm showing that God is our guide. And the ancient Israelites, of course, he was guiding them out there in the wilderness, but their heart wasn't in it. Their heart wasn't really into following God's lead, to allowing God to be their guide, their shepherd, their leader. God says here through David, for all this they sinned still and believed not for his wondrous works. Actually, I think Asaph is the one who wrote this psalm, but that's not the point. It says here, for all this, ancient Israel, believe not his wondrous works. The wondrous works of our all-powerful God in heaven, our shepherd, God miraculously releasing them from captivity, Egyptian slavery, and then leading them by a pillar cloud in the wilderness, parting the waters of the Red Sea. verse 33, it says here, therefore their days did he consume in vanity, and their years in trouble. When he slew them, then they sought him, and they returned and inquired early after God. This is the cycle of sin that ancient Israel continually repeated. In good times, you see, a lot of people they're not interested in God's truth. But when times are tough, when they see their country dying, just look at how many differing groups are coming together because they're understanding now. Groups that you wouldn't have imagined would have had much in common even 5 or 10 years ago. But people now, ordinary people now, whether they're from this radical group over here, this ultra-conservative or this ultra-religious side over here, they're coming together because they see there's a communist attack on the United States of America. Of course, that's what this book is all about. If you don't have a copy of America Under Attack, make sure that you call our operators, the 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. So verse 35 of this psalm, it says, and they remembered that God was their rock and the high God their redeemer. Nevertheless, they did flatter him with their mouth, and they lied unto him with their tongues. See, their heart, they just didn't have the heart to obey. They didn't have the heart. So they'd turn, but it would be half-hearted. They were like the people that Jesus encountered, where he'd say, why do you call me Lord, Lord, but you don't do the things I say? Or the people mentioned in Ezekiel 33, where they loved to hear the message. Yeah, they would tune in and listen, but they wouldn't turn to God. The prophet, Ezekiel that is, says that with their mouth they show much love, but their heart goes after their covetousness. See, our heart needs to go after God. Not lustful desires, but our maker, our creator, the performer of all these wondrous works. Verse 37, it says, for their heart was not right with him, neither were they steadfast in his covenant, but he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity and destroyed them not. Yea, many a time turned he his anger away and did not stir up all his wrath. We talk so often about that prophecy in 2 Kings 14, about God intervening. He looks at Israel in these last days. He sees that there's no help, and that the movement, the communist infiltration, the communist attack, just wants to blot out even the name of Israel. And if you look at the way Israel was, whether anciently in that prophecy or the way our nations are today, the sin that just runs from head to toe, the sickness. I mean, when God intervenes, when he brings back Jeroboam, when our nation is set back on at least a much better track than it's been on, it's not going to be because of repentance on a national scale. Far from it. But it just shows how much mercy and love God, and how much he's trying to reach out to us and appeal to us and warn us. He wants our hearts to be in this. He wants us to be obedient and submissive to his lead. He wants us to fear him. Read what it says in Isaiah 66 about God looking to this man, to one who's humble and contrite and who trembles at the word of God, who trembles before God's word. It's easy to be a Christian in name only, to worship God with your words, just with your words alone, but James 1 says that if we just hear but don't do, we're deceiving ourselves. Verse 39, it says, for he remembered that they were but flesh, a wind that passes away and comes not again. See, God knows about our hard-headedness. He knows about our stubborn refusal to obey his laws and commands. Look at how merciful and compassionate he is to pay any attention to us when we really don't deserve his attention. He still does. He loves us. He still intervenes. He still tries to get our attention. He's a father going after a wayward son. Verse 40, it says, how often did they provoke him in the wilderness and grieve him in the desert? Yea, they turned back and tempted God, and they limited the Holy One of Israel. See, the farther and farther away, the farther and farther you drift from God, the smaller God is and the more limited his power. God can't intervene. God can't perform wondrous works. The closer you get to God, however, the bigger he becomes. The more you see how miraculous his hand is, how much he wants to intervene on our behalf and to help, to deliver, to protect. He's our guide, after all, our shepherd. There's all kinds of examples in the Bible of leaders who, men and women, who protested. They didn't want to carry out God's will or carry on with a mission, a God-given mission. But God just encouraged them all and said, look, I'm a God who performs miracles. I'm a miracle-making God. So if you're Jeremiah and you feel like you're not old enough and mature enough to carry out the very serious and sobering commission that he had to carry out, God said, don't worry. I'll give you strength. I'll give you courage. I'll strengthen your faith. He did the same thing with Moses, who said he had a stutter and he couldn't be God's spokesman. God said, look, I'll perform the miracles needed to speak through you. I'll give you assistance through Aaron, whatever it was. He wants us, really. We heard a message over the weekend just about the eagerness of David to courageously step forward and to fight Goliath and how that he ran out to the battlefield. This is the heart that God wants for us to have. It's easy, and as I say, you see some examples in the Bible where, you know, leaders did at first run from their responsibility, like Jonah. But in the case of David, and the reason this is important is because Acts 13 says that David had a heart like God's. David did not run away from God. He ran to the battle knowing that God would back him, knowing that God would help him. And God certainly did. Do you have that kind of courageous heart that just runs up to the obstacle, whatever it is, and trust God in faith that it'll be removed or you'll be able to break through? Verse 42 of this psalm says, they remembered not his hand nor the day when he delivered them from the enemy. It's just so easy to forget about all those miraculous interventions. We had a question, as I said last week in one of our events, about the miracles that these young people, the campers that are here at SEP, the miracles that they've experienced or that their families have experienced or witnessed. We heard recently that we need to write as many of them down because it's just so easy to forget all of his blessings and benefits. It's just so easy to forget all the times he's intervened on our behalf. I mean, here with the Israelites, you had all the plagues God was raining down on Egypt. You had the final night, the Passover, and then the night to be much observed the next night, fleeing out of Egypt, then going right down into that apparent trap in front of the Red Sea, and then God telling Moses, you know, why do you keep going on and on with your talking? Let's just go. Go forward. And they did. And God parted the waters of the Red Sea, and then he drowned the Egyptians with those same waters not long after the Israelites were led across safely to safety. It's just so easy to forget all of those intervening moments, those miraculous events. God says, remember those, and make sure that your children understand that history as well. That's brought out in the first part of the psalm, as I covered last week. Because they need to know, if they didn't witness it, they need to know about God's miracles, and they need to draw close to God, just like the parents do. We'll continue on with our study of Psalm 78 at a later time. Today, though, we're out of time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.